Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Busby Babe podcast. I'm Nathan Heichel, staff writer for the Busby Babe, filling in for Colin, who isn't able to record this week. He's currently swamped with schoolwork for his master's program, so I'm going to fill in the host chair again today. Joining me on the pod again is Polly Questel. Polly, how are you doing today?
I feel almost dead inside. I think this team's finally broken me, is what it came down. Yeah, for the first time this week, I woke up on Monday, opened up the Twitter, expected to see all the takes, and there really just weren't any. I had writer's block this morning. I said, I don't even know what I'm going to write about this week because, you know, how many times can you write that Andreas Pereira just isn't good without being like, here's the same post I wrote 2 weeks ago. And it was finally like, what else is there to say about this team?
I think we're finding ourselves in the worst possible outcome. We're not delighted by the team. We're not angered by the team. We're just apathetic to the team. It's certainly a reaction I feel is rife through our Slack channel, and to the point where I was flirting with the idea the other day of maybe even creating a fake Twitter account where it'd be like Newton Heath nihilism or something. Sorry, trademark, so nobody take it. Don't you dare take it. So I don't know. Maybe I'll start that up if I'm feeling creative. Lord knows. Right as I was ramping up to write a Marcial piece, he's been in poor form. So I've already talked to our editor about switching up, and we're gonna explore possible midfielders. So, and it's gonna be a subject that we're gonna touch on today on the podcast. I won't dive too much into it right now. So the rundown for today, we're gonna do a brief, just hot plate technique. We're just gonna touch on the Astana game, and then we're gonna take our hand right off. Before we burn ourselves with what was otherwise a meaningless game, we will talk about that Aston Villa game that's got us so just tepid to everything, very lukewarm right now. And then, of course, the special one returns to Old Trafford. We're going to do a preview of Tottenham. Going to touch a little bit on the Pochettino news, what it might mean for United. And a couple other topics as well, as the transfer market and the transfer season is starting to come up on us. So like I alluded to before, we're going to start things off with the Thanksgiving game for us in the States, everybody else worldwide. Just another Thursday in the Europa League. Astana 2, Manchester United 1. It was played in the Kazakhstani capital, and Manchester United trotted out a U23, U18 combined all-star team, which left, I think, all of us in an odd position to rate it and kind of gauge our feelings on things. It was, at least my takeaways, it was ultimately a good experience for the kids. There were definitely some bright spots on the field. Of course, Deschamps Bernard probably had the worst game of them all, giving up the own goal. So that, unfortunately, reflected poorly on him. But other than
that's
that,
harsh.
Well,
that's harsh. Can I
finish my takeaways? And
absolutely.
And then, so my final line is, I wouldn't mind seeing more of them play on the weekends. All right, now, Polly, defend Deschamps Bernard.
I thought he played fine, and I thought the own goal was just, you know, it was the ball kind of hit him in the chest and went in. It took a nasty deflection, but it wasn't like a missed kick. It wasn't like a, you know, when you just accidentally headed or it was the ball got kicked into him real hard, hit off his chest, went in. What else are you going to do? And I understand being upset. Maybe if you had your body facing a different direction, it doesn't take that kind of deflection, but that's such extreme second guessing. I don't think there was anything he could have done about that. Obviously he's going to, and he was pretty distraught about it, feeling like he was at fault, but I wouldn't say he had the worst time out there in Kazakhstan. I think the person who had the worst time out there was a younger player, but comparatively to the team that was on the field, an older player in that of number 23, Luke Shaw.
Well, and of course, I don't mean to be too harsh on Bernard. It's one of those unfortunate things where as we get farther and farther away from the context of the game, you'll just see that there was an own goal on the score sheet. And if you didn't pay attention to the game, or you weren't, you know, really privy to things, you might just think, oh, there was that U18 kid that gave up the goal. But with the context that we currently have as we're recording, let's not forget that the player that you just name dropped, Luke Shaw, was a big reason why Bernard was getting a ball kicked into his chest. The Astana right back was able to, with acres of space, just drive into the box, nobody marking him, and was able to play that cross that ended up being the ball that went in. So with that, and after, besides Deshaun Bernard, what were some of your takeaways from that game?
Really, not much. It was nice to see the kids play. I thought Levitt and Garner held themselves in the midfield. I thought Gomez and Greenwood once again showed why they don't get Greenwood, why he doesn't start more often. Gomez, why he doesn't even get more chances more often. Tahith Chong, let that kid walk away if he wants to. If he doesn't want to sign a contract, goodbye. I won't miss you. I've yet to see him do anything in a first team shirt. Granted, this is a little bit harder because he doesn't have first team players next to him, but he's got players that he's familiar with. That should count for something. And he did nothing. And he ended up fluffing the chance, and he fluffed the chance to make it 2-0. Astana goes right back down, scores the equalizer, which changed the game. If Chong puts that away, we probably win 2-0, and then or at the very least get the win, win the group, and then we're sitting here in 2 weeks probably talking about how Solskjaer should run the same team back out there at Old Trafford in 2 weeks against Alkmaar. And then the other takeaway that I had was, in a game where most of the kids out there were teenagers, and, you know, there were obviously some young mistakes and some positioning mistakes and people all over the place because they're inexperienced, it was hard to stand out and be particularly bad. And Luke Shaw did manage to do that.
Yeah, I think when you pull back and you look at the game, I'm in college basketball mode because we had all the tournaments over the weekend. And of course, my alma mater, VCU, was in the fold for things. So almost comparing it to like a March Madness game, you know, Manchester United trotted out a team of freshmen and they went up against Astana, which was a team of mostly upperclassmen. And I think experience just took over at the very end. You know,
And to go to your analogy, it was like they were a Power Five team of freshmen going up against like a mid-major team of upperclassmen.
Well, I'm glad you didn't just immediately throw VC right back in my face with the mid-major comment. So thank you for that. But yeah, that was kind of my impression. You know, they missed the chance to make it 2-0. And then all of a sudden, Astana really kind of grew into the game and they were doing a lot better. After United had dominated possession for the most part in the first half, Astana were a lot more comfortable on the ball. And it got to the point where they were playing a lot in United's half and they were just more comfortable. And it was one of those things, like, you knew eventually the chances were going to come. And they did. So I think for the most part, it sounds like we kind of had the same takeaway. You know, it was nice getting to watch some Academy guys get to finally have that opportunity to put on their first team shirt. Some of them before I think they even start shaving. So that's a really,
most,
you know,
of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really great experience for them. And I'm super happy to see that, you know, they got to play in a European game. I know it didn't have the same importance as, say, maybe the last Europa League game that we've played. But at the same time, really important for all of them. And I think they did a good job of letting some first-teamers know that, you know, there are people sitting right behind them ready to take the reins if Ollie comes calling. So everybody hopped back on a plane, flew from Central Asia right back to Northwest England, so that way they could face newly promoted side Aston Villa. As I'm sure most of you know, that game ended up finishing 2-2 after a really kind of odd game that Aston Villa took the lead. I'm starting to get really tired of these Sundays where I'm at work and someone asks me how the game's going, and I tell them, well, chances are the other team's probably going to score first, and then they do. Jack Grealish with an absolutely sublime strike into the corner that just left David De Gea watching the ball. I mean, that's the kind of strike that you dream of hitting inside the box.
And that's the kind of strike we've been giving up all season. Like, we spoke about this last show when we talked about how the defense has been not conceding good chances, and they've just been going in, and eventually that'll stop, and it just isn't stopping.
Exactly. And then, so United comes back. Initially, what appeared to be a Marcus Rashford goal was eventually ruled an own goal to Aston Villa keeper Tom Heaton. And then in the second half, United come back. They take a 2-1 lead after Victor Lindelof scores, I believe, his second goal ever in a United shirt, his first of the season, with really a, I think, a more difficult than it looked header. With the way the ball trajectory was happening and the amount of finesse that he had to put on with his own header to make sure that it got past Heaton and into the back of the net. Unfortunately, United then immediately gave up a goal maybe 2 minutes later, and we would eventually end with a 2-2 score after Tyrone Mings hit the kind of goal that you don't really only see in training. Certainly not a finish that you would regularly see, and we can get into how that even occurred. So after that recap, Polly, what would you say went wrong? What went right in that 2-2 draw to newly promoted Aston Villa?
I guess what went right is that they scored two goals. What else could have gone right? It's not even what went wrong. It was almost as what went as expected. And it's something that we've, you know, everybody's discussed, and like I touched at the top of the show, is how many times can you just write Andreas Pereira is not good? And when you saw him line up as in the pivot, in the middle, as a partnership with Fred, after we saw it colossally not work against Sheffield United last week, and United became a much better team when he was taken off the field, how do you run him right back out there? And when you do, how do you expect it to go any other way than the way it did go? United had no buildup through their midfield. Their offense was anemic. They couldn't maintain possession. Pereira's passing was atrocious. Everything that they've managed to build up in Paul Pogba's absence has gone away tenfold now with Pereira playing as this central midfielder. And it all came from... There's on one hand, there's no one else. And on the other hand, this is what I wrote after the Sheffield game was Solskjaer got it wrong against Sheffield, managed to correct his mistakes with his substitutions, got it wrong again when he brought on Twanzebe. And that's all okay. As a manager, you're allowed to have games like that. It's a matter of, especially when you're a young manager, did you learn from your mistakes? And he didn't. And that's the damning part of this game, is that he didn't learn. He threw the same team back out there and the same things happened. And against Sheffield, he got aggressive with his substitutions. Against Aston Villa, it changed the game. And against Aston Villa, he stayed very conservative. His changes were like for like. He brought on Lingard for Mata. He brought on Luke Shaw for Brandon Williams. He brought on Greenwood for Martial. And it didn't change the game.
Yeah, and that was our first reaction, I think, when the team sheet came out on Sunday. Our Slack channel, I think, nearly caught fire when we saw Pereira sitting right next to Fred, and you're looking at Mata also on there, and so you know that Pereira is going to be in that pivot, and you're thinking, how is it possible that this combination from hell is being run back again? And I think the justification, at least, there's a small amount of vindication because Pereira delivered that ball to Rashford that was scored. And you're thinking like, all right, well, that was beautiful. That's the kind of stuff that you want to see from him. But for everything that he did right, he did three and four things wrong. And certainly he's playing severely out of position, at least at the number 10. Maybe he wouldn't be doing as much damage if he had midfield cover with the likes of like a McTominay behind him. Of course, injuries prevent us from being able to take advantage of that. In which case, my next question coming towards you, we've heard that United all season long, before the season, during the season, United was going to trust the kids. We believe in the kids. We're starting to see them matriculate into the first team a lot more. Mason Greenwood is getting some minutes. Brandon Williams is playing significant minutes out of nowhere. Why is it that none of the midfielders can make it into the actual match? Do you think it's a lack of trust from Ollie, or if he's just trying to Mourinho Pereira by just trotting him out and saying, hey, look how bad he is. Now we got to get rid of him. Like, what do you think is the thought process behind not playing like Levitt and Jimmy Garner in the midfield?
It's a great question. Right before I answer it, and I have a great answer for it, I just want to go back, you touch on something that you mentioned, that beautiful cross that he put in, and how, you know, it's one good thing that he does, and then there's always two or three other bad things that he does. And you're right, you're 100% right there, is that one good thing is not good enough to justify his inclusion. And whenever we saw him play it on the right side and or get moved around to the wings, and his defenders would come out and say, well, you know, Pereira, he's not a right winger, he has to be a central player. Pereira and Fred are two of the best guys at hitting a dead ball into putting a dead ball into the box on the team. Pereira is probably the best crosser that we have on the team. So the fact that he can't even do this consistently when he's played on the right side is a problem in and of itself, because that's exactly what it is you give him the chance to play, and somehow he's only putting a cross like this in once every two games. When is enough enough? And like you just asked, when for Solskjaer, when is enough enough? When do we see James Garner? And at the tail end of the last show that we did, when McTominay had just gotten hurt, but we didn't know the extent of his injury, and I said something like, I'm a fan of this injury if he goes to Garner, because injuries are when you get that young player, gets a good run in the team, and he can learn from his mistakes, and he can come out of nowhere. And Solskjaer didn't give him that opportunity, and I thought he had the perfect opportunity to do it against Sheffield, because if he does it against Sheffield and Garner flops, then Solskjaer could sit around and say, well, what else am I supposed to do? Everybody's hurt. And if he is good, then, you know, you look like a genius for playing him. Once he didn't do it against Sheffield, Solskjaer kind of backed him into a corner. And he's had this attitude really all season long, was before I go to the kids, I'm going to give my veterans a chance and give them a chance to lose their place in the team. But also the kids aren't ready. We keep seeing that, you know, we've seen from Greenwood flashes of brilliance, but also even when he plays, we see reasons why he's not ready to play every day. And they are just 17, 18, 19 years old. Even if they were very good, you know, Ronaldo didn't play every day at this level. They're young. Their bodies take a while to recover. And basically Solskjaer went in there and he really dug himself into a corner when he said, Pereira's going to be the guy against Sheffield, and I'm going to give Garner 90 minutes against Astana. And once he did that, Garner was essentially unavailable for the game against Villa. And it was telling that even when he got the formation so wrong against Sheffield, you know, his reaction was to put Lingard in there as a central midfielder, not Garner, which gave me the impression that he was never really considering playing Garner. He was more of in emergencies only. And while we all like what we see out of Garner, there were some times against Astana where the ball was up in the air and fighting for position before that header comes, he was so easily brushed away when the Astana players got physical with him. And that's Astana. Now take him to the Premier League where everybody plays physical. And you realize, you know, that's going to happen even more in a Premier League game, is the ball's up in the air and you got to box somebody out to try to, you know, get that header. He's going to be shoved away with ease. And that just comes from his build, you know, skill wise. I think he's there positionally. He probably has some stuff to learn, but he's really good at that too. But some people, they just, you don't have the build to play against men when you're 18. Some people at 18 do, some people don't. And Garner just needs to grow into his body, because that's a huge part of his game. McTominay, when he broke into the team, was this massive dude. And he didn't get bossed around in the midfield. You try to get physical with McTominay, he's going to get physical right back at you. Garner can be pushed around, and I think that's a big reason why he hasn't gotten his chance from Solskjaer yet. And I think it's kind of, I think it would be unfair to throw him out there with no one. I'd like to see him be thrown out there, but I do understand Solskjaer's desire to protect him for that reason. I do wish he was a little bit further along and Solskjaer could have said, I'm going to throw you out there against Sheffield. And because we don't know if Pereira could play as a six, he really can't, but we think he might be able to. I'm going to try him there against Astana, because if he flops there, it's not a big deal. But instead, he kind of, the way he worked it out with the schedule, he really didn't have a choice.
Do you think with the likes of Scott McTominay getting hurt, maybe he's a little bit more apprehensive to play a Garner when Garner's partner in the midfield would be Fred? Do you think maybe he'd be more willing to play Garner with a McTominay, where McTominay can play more of that enforcer role, so that way Garner isn't getting bossed around as much?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at that midfield, Garner, Fred and Andreas, and it's just soft as can be. And this people that have that hate on Fred, and there's still people hating on Fred, which I don't understand. He's not a physical player. He's not. He's like more of a, you know, he's a poor man's Michael Carrick in that he reads the game well. He gets interceptions. He needs to work on his, you know, his passing isn't that of Carrick, but it's getting better. But he's not going to be that physical piece, which is what McTominay is, which is why McTominay is so good against the top teams, less good against, you know, the bottom teams that sit back. But yeah, that's 100% has to be. If McTominay is fit, you could play Garner as your six, and McTominay will be there as your midfield enforcer. With, you know, if you play Garner and Fred, who's playing in front of them? Pereira, Lingard. You know, if someone makes a hard tackle, you know, who's coming? Who's coming to defend you? And we did see Fred get involved in protecting Brandon Williams a bit against Brighton, but I don't know if Fred's that guy that, you know, screams, I'm going to protect him.
Right. And that's certainly been kind of what I've seen as well. To a certain degree, I don't know that you can fault Fred on his physicality either. I mean, he's a much smaller player compared to the likes of like a Scott McTominay. He complements well when he's got a bigger midfielder that can kind of play that hockey enforcer role, while he can kind of play that box to box midfield, because like you said, he does have the engine where he can be all around the field. So I think maybe we can chalk that up then as, to a certain degree, it's kind of a conservative play, but maybe Solskjaer wants to set Jimmy Garner up where he's got a more consistent partner, so that way he's not asked to do too much too fast.
I think you'd be throwing him to the wolves, but I mean, ultimately, you touched on this a bit before when you said, is he just Mourinho-ing Pereira and throwing him out there to prove that he's just not good enough? And I think there's an element of that, because let's not forget, Solskjaer wanted a midfielder this summer, and they identified Sean Longstaff. Maybe that would have been the wrong pick. Maybe it wouldn't have. Maybe in this team, Longstaff would do very well, given it he'd be playing a slightly different role than he's playing at Newcastle. If not, getting 3 out of 4 transfers right ain't bad. But Newcastle quoted that price of $50 million, and United basically said, we ain't paying that for him. And all of a sudden, the next day, Solskjaer starts talking up McTominay and Pereira as they could do what Ander Herrera did, which is classic Solskjaer, as he talks up his own guys, you know, to build up their confidence. But he did it right after he was basically told, we ain't getting you a midfielder. And now he's throwing Pereira out there maybe it is a little bit of Mourinho of, look, this is the guy you gave me, and he's clearly not good enough. And it comes down to what I said before, is how many times can you write Andreas Pereira just isn't good enough? And how many times can you write Ed Woodward is terrible? Because the bottom line is, fans have been screaming for Pereira for years. He was this hot prospect under Van Gaal. He scored that free kick against Ipswich. He goes on loan to La Liga a few times, scores a few goals there. Mourinho talked him up. Fans wanted him to come good. He's an academy player. We thought he would come good. Every single fan wants him to come good. And part of this season is answering questions of, what kind of player is Lingard? Can he be reliable on a day-in, day-out basis? Can Juan Mata provide us anything? besides just being a body that can maybe take up 70 minutes of time, is what is Andreas Pereira? Do we have something in it? And that question has been answered, but the problem is, if the answer is he's terrible, we had no backup option. And now we're finding out that the answer is he's terrible, and the board has left us with no backup option. And that is just such a problem.
Well, without rehashing the sins of the summer transfer window too much, there was a lot of smoke as far as the Bruno Fernandes transfer was concerned as well. And the best excuse that they could come up with was, oh, we actually weren't that interested with Bruno Fernandes. He gives up the ball too much. And all I got to say to that is, what do we got right now comparatively to Bruno Fernandes? Because the two guys that we're trotting out in the midfield aren't necessarily scoring goals like Bruno Fernandes can do, or assisting goals like Bruno Fernandes can do. But we won't get too deep into the weeds.
I still think if you have Bruno Fernandes, you still have the same problem right now, because he's more of, he would be more of an advanced player. Like, he's, you know, if Paul Pogba is fit, you would start McTominay, Pogba, and you would start Bruno as a more advanced one. Or if you want, you know, or he'd be a backup to Pogba. He's, so instead, you know, in other games where you're looking at Andreas as that black hole of the number 10 position, that would be Bruno. In this situation where you are missing one half of your midfield pivot, that's not really Bruno either.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there, because we're going to have to tag the podcast as not safe for work if we start talking about McTominay, Pogba, and Bruno Fernandes as a midfield together.
It should be Fred Pogba and Bruno.
Yeah. So I guess one last question before we send it to an ad break. Do you think Ollie's getting too conservative right now?
No. Genuinely, what else can he do? That's really what it came down to. And again, I thought he botched the Sheffield game. He made the right adjustments in the second half, which is something that he had not been doing earlier this season. He made the right adjustments. He did get too conservative in bringing on Twanzebe. And that comes right out of Sir Alex Ferguson, who wrote about this in his book, is managing risk. Why did we score so many goals late in the game against, you know, when I was the manager? It wasn't that we just threw caution to the wind. It was when we saw a team pull off a striker and change from a 4-4-2 to a 4-5-1 because they brought on a defensive midfielder, that allowed us to send an extra man forward because we had to worry about one fewer guy coming back the other way. And when you brought on Twanzebe with 6 minutes to go, plus there had been four goals scored in the second half, you're probably looking at 4 minutes of injury time. You brought him on with 10 minutes to go. And between when they scored the third goal and when they brought Twanzebe on, they had three very good counterattacks, all of which started from the back. You know, Mason Greenwood got the ball in space. The reason it didn't turn into an attack was because he held play up because no one was up with him. He was waiting for guys to come up. Daniel James started an attack from the back and got forward. There was just no – I bring on Twanzebe in maybe the 91st minute, but when you did it with 10 minutes to go, it signaled to Sheffield, we're done attacking. It signaled to United, we're not getting forward anymore, and the game changed. They were knackered, and instead they said, well, United aren't going to come back at us. They're going to try to sit back and defend this lead. We could throw guys forward, and ultimately they scored a goal like that. So I thought he was conservative there, and then once you peg these teenagers into it, play 90 minutes in Kazakhstan, take an 11-hour flight home Thursday night, to play them on Sunday with the way that their bodies, these 18, 19-year-old bodies, don't recover fast, against Villa, I would have went with Lingard instead of Pereira, but he also played in Kazakhstan. So what else do you do?
Well, clearly you had to give the captain his rest. So we'll.
He's also a young prospect, and he got a goal, so you know his body takes a while to recover.
Hey, it's Academy God Messi Lingard coming through in the Kazakhstani capital. Well, we're done rehashing the past. We're going to take a quick ad break real quick, guys, and then we will be back to talk Tottenham. All right, we're back here on the Busby Babe. Nathan Heinchel here, joined by Polly Questel. We talked about the Astana match and the Aston Villa match, and now it is time to talk about the match that everyone's been waiting for the last, give it 2 weeks. The boogeyman, Jose Mourinho, the special one. He's making his return to Old Trafford under new colors. Newly appointed Tottenham manager takes over for potential Manchester United manager target Mauricio Pochettino. Just barely a year after getting sacked, Jose Mourinho returns with a team that is now all of a sudden relatively in form as Manchester United continues to, depending on how you want to look at it, kind of stall out. So, Polly, just first of all, what was your initial reactions when the Poch news drops and then the Mourinho news drops maybe hours later?
The Poch news was one of shock, mainly because it came so late in the international break. You expect that kind of news to happen. The international, you play on Sunday, the players go away to their national teams on Monday. That's when the news would happen. You bring in your new guy some point that week. He could start preparing. Your players come back the following week. They know what happened, and they're ready to go. And he can, and your new manager can work with the players that haven't left for their national teams. This was England played on what, Monday, and suddenly on Tuesday, Poch is out. Like the England Kane is getting ready to come back to Tottenham, and finds out that his manager's been sacked. And just within hours, it came back to Mourinho is in, which was a shock. And as someone who hates Mourinho with every fiber of my body and has a lot of friends who were Tottenham fans who spent 2.5 years mocking me and perpetuating the banter at all times, it was great. I got to mock them back, and it was, oh boy, you're in for something, and I'm so happy, and I am not going to let you live this down for the next, I'm assuming, 2.5 to 3 years based on his resume being his resume. The old Bill Parcells quote, you are what your record says you are. And then, I started to think about it, and, I knew in the immediate term it would be bad for United because Mourinho is very, he goes into a new club, he puts on the PR, he goes on this PR offensive, turns on the charm, gets the media on his side, I'm a changed man, yada, 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 same thing every time, has success pretty quickly. But I realized this Tottenham squad is very much a Mourinho squad, and he can do very well with them. It'll be interesting to see what happens when the transfer market opens and Mourinho starts being like, well, let me bring in my players who, will make the squad worse. But if this is the squad he has, he's going to be very good with it.
Yeah, I think that was similar to my initial reaction. One of my best friends is a Tottenham fan, and because of that, I watch Tottenham probably next as much as I do Manchester United. In a certain way, I mean, I don't have any hate in my heart for Manchester or for Tottenham. It's one of those things, like I really enjoyed watching the Pochettino teams, and so it kind of blew my mind. Like you said, the timing was really weird. I mean, I think that's what we all said. We're like, why is he getting fired 4 days before domestic league starts up again? Like that should have happened a week and a half ago. And as the news flutters on, and they basically had asked Pochettino to leave at the start of the international break, and he said, if you guys want me to leave, you're going to pay me to do that, which is good on Poch for getting his money if he's if he's going to get kicked out of the team that he basically built. And what was more, the first thing I sent to my friend Sean was, I believe it was something along the lines of, I'm sorry, when the Mourinho news came. Just knowing the way things worked at Manchester United under Jose Mourinho, I guess just to be clear and honest with everybody, I to a certain degree, I am a little charmed by Jose Mourinho. I like him as a wrestling heel. He drove me insane as the manager of the team that I support.
Right. My first reaction. I am so happy he's back in my life and so happy he's not part of my team.
Exactly. It is nice to have him back because and I tweeted about this too. When a couple weeks ago when ESPN FC did there 1 year ago today, and it was the picture in Turin of Jose Mourinho with his hand cupped to his ear, and he's sitting there winking at all the Juventus fans in Turin. And I'm just sitting here going, like, this is one of the greatest moments of shit-talking I've ever seen. I mean, he's telling a stadium of over 40,000 people to, you know, just I hear you guys, like, I just sent in Marouane Fellaini and he stole a win in your stadium. How do you feel? You've got Cristiano Ronaldo and I beat you in your stadium. And, like, that Mourinho's fun, but I'm certainly glad he's not our manager anymore. The problem is I recognize, like you've recognized, that he is potentially really good for Tottenham, at least in the short term. So kind of refocusing things to the upcoming match. Like you said, he's kind of got the right guys for what he wants to do. He's got experienced center backs. He's got
finally gets Toby Alderweireld.
Yeah, he finally gets the kind of striker I think that he wants to. Someone who has great positioning, has nose for goal, can hold up play. And then, my God, he's got two lightning fast wingers that can play on either side of that striker. For the most part, I think that the way Mourinho wanted to play at Manchester United and he got stalled out by Woodward, he's going to be able to play at least in the immediate term for Tottenham. Setting up some context as well. The one thing that you expect from a Jose Mourinho team is that they lock down on defense. Right now, they are still leaking goals, as evidenced by that West Ham match. They go up 3-0 and then all of a sudden find themselves with a 3-2 scoreline, and West Ham was trying to press for a third goal, and you're like, what's happening right now? The Olympiacos game, they go down 2-0 in Tottenham before finally bringing it back and winning 4-2. So you find yourself in this odd situation where they're not necessarily defending particularly well. They are giving up goals, but they are scoring goals. And weirdly enough, Manchester United finds itself in that same position after its run of form, where for the most part, it wasn't really conceding goals, but it wasn't scoring goals. Now United is got 5 goals in their last 2 Premier League matches, but they have also let in 5 goals in those last 2 Premier League matches. So what are your immediate thoughts, Pauly, as far as this Tottenham matchup? How do you think things match up for the two teams?
It's really interesting because everybody knows Mourinho's style, and Mourinho knows everybody knows that, and he does it every year. Every time he goes to a new place, oh no, I'm not going to play this negative football. I'm not going to be, you know, it's not going to be this sit back, park the bus, play defensive style. And he tried not doing it his first year at United. He very much tried not doing it year number two when we signed Lukaku. If you remember those first few games where it was Lukaku up front with Mkhitaryan behind him, Mata on the right, and either Martial or Rashford on the left. But what was brilliant about that team was all four of those guys interchanged, which was so not Mourinho's style.
4-0 FC.
Mourinho is such a rigid guy. You know, I give one guy some freedom and that's it. The other 10 guys have to be rigid in their positioning because what happens if we lose the ball? And that team ran over people. And then they went to Anfield. They got their 0-0 because Mourinho's obsessed with keeping a clean sheet at Anfield. Then they lost to Huddersfield, and it became pragmatic Jose again. Once the results stopped going their way, it became pragmatic Jose. And at Tottenham in the first few games, it's been very interesting. He's kind of been playing with a bit of a back three. Is in possession. Ben Davies, the left back, tucks in to become the third center back. You have Dyer and Winks. Serge Aurier flies all the way up the right side to become a right winger. Kane's there. Dele Alli kind of plays as this number 10 off the shoulder of Kane. Son stays wide. And you get Lucas Moura kind of tucking inside and becoming like an inside right forward. And it creates essentially a front five. And it's been very interesting. But like you said, it's been 60 minutes, run teams off the field. 30 minutes now where West Ham and who did they play on Saturday? Let me pull that up real quickly. Sorry for this amazing radio right now because I'm drawing a blank. Bournemouth hitting them for 2 goals. And all of a sudden, your 3-0 wins become these cagey, we got to hold on for a win game. is he going to play like that against United? Because frankly, I don't know how United are going to cope with that. You know, part of the reason that we've conceded 5 goals in our last 2 games, not to beat a dead horse, but has been Andreas in midfield. He's positionally unaware. It's been terrible. And that's why Sheffield, you know, Sheffield scored twice with Pereira out there. Villa scored twice with Pereira out there. The Grealish goal, Pereira did a terrible job of closing down Grealish. The Sheffield's second goal, Pereira gives the ball away. It's not a coincidence that in 2 games that Pereira has started the midfield, they've conceded 5 goals. So can United cope with that? At the same time, if McTominay or Pogba are back and Tottenham play like that, that plays right into United's hands, and they become very good. And Mourinho, the ever big-time pragmatist, he very much knows United's biggest weakness is breaking down a low block. So he knows if he comes into Old Trafford and sets Tottenham up very defensively, he might fix their defensive problems, which he needs to do because he's conceded 2 goals in all 3 of his games. And United will really struggle. And he can, you know, nick a late goal and get a 1-0 win against them, which is exactly what he did 2 years ago at Old Trafford with United against Tottenham. But that'd be bad for him to, you know, go into that pragmatist route this early in his tenure. So it's very interesting to me to see which way he's going to go.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde situation, because you wonder, does tactical genius Mourinho show up and just shut down Solskjaer, just ruin his tactics and gets a smash and grab in Old Trafford? Or do you think wrestling heel, I take everything personally, I don't want the media ruining my, you know, parade of good feelings, Jose Mourinho is like, well, I can't park the bus in my first game back at Manchester United, I got to go at him. So I'd be really curious to see how that ends up turning out, because it's a flip of a coin. You might get both.
But isn't that what he did? Isn't that what he did against Chelsea? And how'd that go? You know, what did he do when United first came back to Stamford Bridge? When he went to Stamford Bridge for the first time with United. They were down within seconds, and they got run off the field that day.
Yeah, I don't like to talk about that game. That was so bad.
Maybe he does learn from that. I mean, this is the thing, is This is always one of my favorite fixture days of the season. Not particular United Tottenham, but that first week where everybody has to play midweek, because the League Cup, you know, everybody rotates their squad, and every other time we have midweek games, it's European, so only 6 or 7 teams are playing. This is the first time that everybody in England has to play an important game midweek, coming 2 days after another game. My friends and I always say, like, weird midweeky things tend to happen in these games. You can't really predict any of them because some teams can handle it better than others, and just weird things tend to happen. So maybe Mourinho, you know, mitigates risk there and goes the pragmatic route. I just think he has to know how he's going to charm the media if he does, because that's going to be the story. Is after 3 games, Tottenham were shipping goals, and boom, we're parking the bus, especially against a quote-unquote big team, even though at this point, why are, you know, like, United have been shit for 6 years, why are we still a big team? But we are. Is that how he's going to do it?
Well, certainly it looks poor if Mourinho parks the bus against a plucky mid-table side like Manchester United.
It's a very successful strategy. I mean, yeah. No team that is park the bus against us is lost this season.
Well, and I think looking back at the last 2 Tottenham games is a really interesting exercise, both for us and for Mourinho as well. The last match against Tottenham, a game that he wasn't a part of for because he had just gotten the sack. And it was the David De Gea show against Tottenham, where he made a Tim Howard level amount of saves that brought a single tear to my eye. I mean, it was unbelievable to watch. And then you had the other match that Jose Mourinho was at the helm of Manchester United, a midweek match, no less. And at first
that's
we wanted
a Monday.
We wanted it. Oh, was it a Monday?
Yeah, it was either like a Friday or a Monday.
We wanted
like,
to chalk
I know
that
why
one
you're
up
thinking
as,
midweek, but it was just like the tail end of the weekend.
We were trying to chalk that one up as a weird one. But of course, Lucas Moura, I think single-handedly signed Jose Mourinho's death certificate. It just took 4 months to get processed. That was
after that game where I put the champagne in the refrigerator.
Yeah, it was a 3-0 defeat at Old Trafford, and after watching that game is about the same time that I had first started talking to Brent about joining the Busby Babe, and that was when I started my series about openly talking about who's going to replace Jose Mourinho. So it'll be interesting to see how history might dictate what the game on Wednesday will come about.
Also leads to an interesting thing of if you look at the United side of things, because remember last year when Solskjaer came in and they won all those games, but they really didn't play anybody. They won their first five games, or actually they drew Burnley, but you know, their first five games were against like the bottom eight teams in the table, and everybody earmarked that Tottenham game for two reasons. One, it was the first quote unquote test. And two, it was everybody thought, everybody thought that Pochettino would be the next manager of United, and it was kind of like a big test there. And Solskjaer, the first six or seven games with United, the tactics were really, you guys are much better than what you've been playing. Like, go out there and play. Here, I'm going to put you in a 4-3-3. Pogba, go forward. Try to hit teams on the break. Pogba, do your thing. Boom. Against Tottenham, they actually really played Mourinho ball, and it was his tactics. I'm not going to say completely shut them down, because it was, you know, it was like David De Gea against Arsenal-esque, where De Gea really bailed them out several times. But what I'm trying to say is Solskjaer raised his game there. And I think you have to think that someone who's got that competitive streak like Solskjaer knows what he's coming up against Mourinho, and he's going to want to raise his game there. And not only that, but even if Solskjaer can't rally his players, you would have to think a lot of these players, bar Scott McTominay, want to prove something to Jose Mourinho.
Well, and we focus on the Mourinho tactics, maybe turning our eyes back on the manager of Manchester United. Solskjaer, tactically speaking, say, for instance, McTominay's back from injury. The initial reports out of the United press release suggest he might be back. Even more of a miracle if Pogba, who may or may not be still far off from a return, manages to make it back for this Tottenham match. I don't know if it's vintage Solskjaer at this point, but could you see him even maybe trotting out a 4-4-2 diamond against Tottenham, against Jose Mourinho's Tottenham?
But I mean, here's the question. I mean, the question is who plays in that diamond? If only McTominay is back, then you know what's your diamond? Is it Lingard? Then your diamond is essentially Fred, Andreas, Lingard, and McTominay, which is not far off from your diamond against Chelsea. Which is, I do think that diamond is coming back. And I think it's not a bad idea. Again, you know, this is what I always say. Lingard is here to play against the bigger teams. He's very good when you put him, you know, in at the top of a diamond and press teams. I think Daniel James will be very useful coming off the bench against Tottenham. But it scares me right now to have McTominay, Fred, Pereira, and Lingard. Maybe if you had Pogba back too, and you had Pogba, Fred, McTominay, and then either Lingard or Andreas, it works. But I thought about this morning. I feel like that's the formation to go with. You put Lingard or Andreas at the top of that diamond to sit on, you know, to press the defenders and really sit on Harry Winks, who's the big time passer to get the Tottenham team going. I don't think this is the right personnel to be able to do it.
Well, piggybacking off of what we discussed earlier, do you think if McTominay's back, doing a diamond with the McTominay and Fred, is that enough cover for maybe trotting out Jimmy Garner and then having Jesse Lingard play at the top of that diamond?
It's interesting. I thought about it today. I did think about that today too. Maybe he just, maybe he rolls the dice and goes with Gardner, even though it's a big game. You know, players have made their debuts in big games before. Remember 2 years ago where we played Liverpool and all of a sudden the day of the game came and, you know, they basically said Paul Pogba has an illness, which no one in their right mind believed. And we went with Scott McTominay and he was fantastic that game. Maybe that is enough. If McTominay's back, maybe that is enough to go with Gardner. I don't see Solskjaer doing it. I feel like he's been trying to protect Gardner just and be like a break in case of emergency only. And I worry about going too defensive because I also think Ashley Young is going to play at left back.
I don't know if that's the worst move. I'm hesitant to say that. I can already just feel whatever mean message I'll get from our editor for saying that. But I feel like Brandon Williams has been playing a lot of minutes recently. He's gotten exposed just a smidge here and there. And I think maybe giving him a week off as well as not throwing him to the Jose Mourinho Wolves might be good. Certainly Ashley Young, I think, brings the physicality too that you might want for this matchup. That says no Lucas Moura, you're not going to, you know, run on my side.
Right. And it's Lucas Moura and Serge Aurier. It's not that I wouldn't say Williams has been exposed. I'd say he's young and he's making mistakes that young players make, and that's fine. And when you scream for Ollie to play the kids, you have to understand that the kids are going to make mistakes. You hope that they don't cost you the match. In Williams's case, it did cost you a goal, which ultimately was bad because we didn't score a third goal. It's also
you're talking
the same,
about the Villa,
you know,
match, correct?
Yeah, he played Mings onside. He was slow. Yeah. He lollygagged it and he played Mings onside. He was nowhere near the play. He didn't realize, but he played him onside. That's, you know, you got to learn when on a play like that, you got to run out of the box. Young kid, you learn. It's a mistake. It happened. I totally understand it. It's also one of those things, the same way that I just said that Gardner, you know, played against Astana and he couldn't get, you know, they need time to recover. The same way I said, I was hoping, you know, we just gotten Brandon Williams when Ashley Young was suspended off of that Europa League schedule so that hopefully now he could play in the Premier League again. And he is stuck with that. It's still two games in a week, you know, and what's he going to do? Run him back out there against City? Like that'd be three games in a week. And he's young. He can't handle that. And Ashley Young is our best defensive left back. Like I said, the last time he played a full season at left back, he ended up going to the World Cup semifinal. He takes away from what you could do going forward. But, you know, what's Mo Salah ever done against Ashley Young as a left back? He's defensively, when he plays defensively, he's pretty solid. You're going to have Serge Aurier bombing down that right wing. Lucas Moura there. I wouldn't trust Luke Shaw. So I think Young will come into the team, and that scares me if you play a very defensive midfield with like that.
All right. So we kind of discussed both the tactics for the managers and what we think could be possibilities. Looking at the chess pieces on the board, what do you think is the most anticipated matchup, whether it be individual or if it's, you know, particular sections of the field? You know, what's most interesting to you as United and Tottenham meet each other?
It goes back to how I hate to harp on it. And this is what NBC, their graphic of like what's coming up this week. You know, they had four games up on the board and each one featured, like, you know how NBC is doing like those, basically those wrestling promos this year. They show the two players and you basically expect them to see like the Intercontinental titles on the line on Tuesday night. It was player, 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 player. And then United Tottenham, it was Solskjaer, Mourinho. And that's really the matchup, is how are they going to come out tactically? No one's sitting here being like, well, how is that Harry Winks, Eric Dier midfield going to play against hopefully McTominay and Fred, if not Pogba. I'm still in shock that Pogba's not back for this game. You would think that this kid would do everything in his power to be playing against Mourinho. You're not looking at is it Martial versus Toby Alderweireld or Harry Kane versus versus Harry Maguire. You know, like Harry Kane's not had a great record against United. It's been better in recent years, but ultimately he's been, you know, pretty quiet. He scored a few goals because he's a very good striker, and he does that. But on the field, there really isn't a sexy matchup. There really isn't a you got Sadio Mane barring down the left wing and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who's very good at stopping people, going up against each other. So I really just think it's, does Mourinho come out and park the bus, or what does Solskjaer do? And do these players have enough fire in them to want to beat Mourinho that they'll be able to get it done?
Well, a quick correction, because you accidentally said Sadio Mane. You're looking too far ahead for the next derby, but that was actually my most anticipated matchup, I think, is Aaron Wan-Bissaka versus Heung-Min Son. I think Sonny he has the potential to just absolutely wreck the game. And I think this is going to be really the first massive test for Aaron Wan-Bissaka. He's been, for the most part, just a vacuum on the right side, shutting down whoever your best left winger is. He really is just an incredible defensive force, almost to the detriment to his offensive game, despite that one really nice volley he had against Aston Villa. But I think his ability, if he can shut down Heung-Min Son and take out a good portion of the left side, I think that drastically changes what Tottenham's capable of doing, not having that player that can cut inside or even get centrally or playing on the left wing. I'll be curious to see how Wan-Bissaka handles that. He's, for the most part, been the best defensive right back in the entire league. His tackle numbers are absolutely insane, especially for this point of the year. So I'll be curious to see how that one works out.
Yeah, you want me to give you a player? I'll give you one. Dele Alli versus Victor Lindelof. Because yeah, for that exact reason that you just said, is when I discussed the tactics beforehand, how Alli's been playing as like this number 10 off to the left, that'll put him right up against Lindelof. Wan-Bissaka can't really help if he's got his hands tied up with Heung-Min Son. So it's going to be, I would probably go to Axel Tuanzebe, that one wouldn't shock me either. The fact that, again, Lindelof probably starts against Villa because Tuanzebe had played 90 minutes against Astana, flew 11 hours to get back, probably just can't go 90 minutes against Villa, can go 90 minutes against Tottenham. And it wouldn't, Lindelof scored the goal, but defensively, wouldn't shock me to see Tuanzebe step in there.
Well, and of course, you've got one fun matchup that everybody is probably already anticipating. The two big giant dumb heads of Harry Maguire versus Harry Kane. I'll be excited to see how that one turns out. Two English players going up against each other as well. Certainly, they match each other on pace and physicality.
Their personalities just make me think of English food, just like no flavor whatsoever, just as boring as you could be.
I can't say I've had too much English food, so I won't weigh in on that. I mean, certainly if somebody wants to deliver some fish and chips to me on Wednesday, I'll gladly take it with some malt vinegar.
Here's the thing. Fish and chips in America taste better than fish and chips in London. They don't believe in seasoning over there.
Whoa. All right. It's getting spicy, no pun intended. So I'm going to ask you another question and get you out of this hole that you've dug. is this match more important to Mourinho or Solskjaer?
Oh, that's a real good question. In terms of the season, Solskjaer. In terms of Mourinho, definitely wants to come in there and whip United. To say you shouldn't have gotten rid of me. Now, granted, you're not whipping the same United team that Mourinho left last year. And he'll do the whole, after the game, the same way he's been doing it all year. Like, oh, it's not and by all year, I mean the last three games. Oh, it's not about me. But like, let's do this interview about me, but it's not about me. Solskjaer will downplay it completely because what does he care? He has the job. Mourinho doesn't. But in terms of the season, oh, it's very important for Solskjaer.
All right. And then I'm going to make you put your neck out on the line. I'm going to ask you for a score prediction. But before you give that score, remember, Tottenham is playing with a handicap, because it'll be at Old Trafford, so they cannot bring their ball boy with them. So what do you think how this game is going to turn out?
1-0.
Who wins?
I'm not answering that question.
Oh.
No, I think it'll come away 1-1.
All right, there we go. So Pauly is predicting a result about as seasoned and as spicy as English food, as he would say.
Exactly.
All right, so moving on from that match, we're going to just brush on a couple more topics that have kind of popped up in the news as of recent weeks since we last recorded. And kind of that third man that people are talking about in whispers and wondering, you know, out loud what his future is. We're going to talk about Mauricio Pochettino for a little bit. Just do you think it's Twitter nonsense, or do you think there's validity to the idea that a loss for Solskjaer against Tottenham could mean imminent doom with Mauricio Pochettino being available?
Twitter nonsense. I mean, I wrote the manifesto last week about why United should stay the course, at least for this season, and stick with Solskjaer before going to Pochettino. And obviously, I'm not going to change from that despite two horrific results since then. But primarily, there are a lot of reports, especially out in The Athletic today, that say that Solskjaer's job not under fire, that the board signed up for this rebuild knowing it was going to be a bumpy ride. And frankly, you can't sanction the sales of Alexis Sanchez, Chris Smalling, Romelu Lukaku, and Ander Herrera and not bring in any replacements for them without knowing that it's going to be a bumpy ride. I also, you know, Pochettino released a statement today saying that he's in Argentina and he's focusing on relaxing and recuperating and recharging his batteries, which, you know, could just be Twitter. Maybe if United called tomorrow, he's on the next flight to Manchester. It could just be things change, plans change. But that did happen today. I also read somewhere, and they said it was Sky Sports that reported it, but I never really saw it. So I can't tell you if this is definitively true, but it would make a lot of sense. But I did see somewhere that said that the money that Tottenham owes Pochettino is to be paid out in 3 and 6 months installments. And if he takes a job within the next 6 months or 3 months, then he loses whatever installment he still has left, which means, yeah, you won't have to pay Tottenham the $40 million that it would have taken to break his contract a year ago. But if you wanted to sign him now, Pochettino would probably demand that you make up for that money that Tottenham owes him, in which case it becomes expensive. And it makes it brilliant on Tottenham's end. They're basically guaranteeing that he won't take another job until the end of the season. And if you're Pochettino, why walk into this mess right now? Why not just sit on your butt, get paid, take the job in May? You know, wouldn't that make the most sense?
Well, it was perfect timing, at least for a relaxation point. If Pochettino has, in fact, returned to his native Argentina, it is the summer starting. He's probably soaking up the sun, eating some delicious food.
With flavor.
Yeah, you're really really going to heat up those Twitter mentions for yourself.
If any English person wants to come at me and tell me that their food is flavor, by all means.
Well, as someone who watches a lot of cooking shows, I'm desperate to get down to Buenos Aires. But anyway, without getting too off the rails here, and without you having to recite your entire article that you've already written, of course, we will make a recommendation for you guys to read that after the podcast. What are some of your reservations for bringing in Poch?
I don't know if, you know, what's the difference? It's not like the players are mutinizing against your coach. It's not like they hate the style. So you're not getting that new manager bump when he comes in. Pochettino's tactics are astonishingly similar to Solskjaer's. They both play this high-pressing, high-intensity style of play that requires creativity. You know, that's why Tottenham were really struggling at the beginning of the year, because for two reasons. One is Pochettino seemed to have either he was overthinking things or he forgot how to use Dele Alli. Like, Mourinho comes in and basically just says, play as that second striker and bar it in and get goals. You know, he's a 20-goal scorer. Pochettino's team relies on creativity from a number 10 and their fullbacks. United, you know, Kieran Trippier had defensive issues, but is one of the best attacking fullbacks in the world. United don't have attacking fullbacks. They barely even have a fullback. They don't have a number 10. So, like, what's, you know, Pochettino comes in, what's he going to do? Andreas Pereira is still Andreas Pereira. And if you don't want to use Andreas Pereira, Jesse Lingard is still Jesse Lingard. So you're not changing the style. You're not changing the tactics and getting that new manager bounce. And, you know, the other notion that, oh, Pochettino's really good at promoting youth players, he's promoted too. He's promoted Harry Winks. And that's, you know, they bought Dele Alli when he was young. He had Harry Kane. Everybody knew Harry Kane was going to be a breakout star in the Premier League Pochettino's first year. Kyle Walker was already the player of the year. Danny Rose was a very well-known commodity. He had hit that goal against Arsenal like 5 years earlier. He did a good job weeding out the dead wood of the squad the same way that Solskjaer's had. His signings, he's made some good ones. He swung and missed on a bunch. So is he a better overall manager? Yes, for sure. There's no doubt about that because Solskjaer hasn't done enough to even merit something. But at the same time, yes, United are struggling in the league, but they haven't been eliminated from any of the cups. You know, what happens if United finish ninth this year and they win the Europa League and win the League Cup? Like, is that all of a sudden a bad season? They're on the right track right now. Just let it go for another year. I would say let it go for another year and a half. My hope would have been that Pochettino took the Bayern Munich job right around now, because you go to Bayern Munich, it's impossible to fail there. If he did fail there, then it would be like, well, we dodged a bullet. But he probably won't fail there. He'll win some trophies. He'll learn how to get your team over the hump into winning. And the shelf life of a manager at Bayern Munich is really only a year and a half anyway. So you give Solskjaer another year to bring in more players, because so far the players he's brought in have been home runs. And you say what you want about Dan James. He wasn't signed to be good this year. He was signed to, you know, be good next year and the year after and develop and get better. You bring in more of those guys, and Pochettino would be ready to take over in a year and a half. I love Solskjaer because I love the direction he's taking this club in. I ultimately think, especially because of what we talked about before, how he didn't learn from the mistakes against Sheffield, but I ultimately think he is going to be the guy that gets United through this, but not going to be the guy that takes them to the next level.
There was a interesting thought experiment that I had had. I can't remember if it was maybe in our Slack channel or if it was some of my like-minded Manchester United friends just in a random group chat. But I had wondered aloud while Pochettino was still on the Tottenham. Well, I won't say that while he was still on the Tottenham payroll, because he still is. While he was still the manager of Tottenham, I had wondered aloud if maybe Solskjaer was kind of in a position right now where he steers the ship in the direction that Pochettino would want. And when Pochettino was ready to make the move to Manchester United, this is all conspiracy theory, maybe Solskjaer transitions into a senior role, maybe not necessarily a director of football role, but kind of like a consultant of sorts, where he can identify who he thinks are quote unquote United players. Certainly with their tactics having some similarity, you know, maybe they would gel well as far as like, hey, these are the guys I've identified, and Pochettino could be like, hey, all those guys sound great, or I like some of those, let's go with that, let's search out some other guys. I like to think also with Solskjaer just being so dang likable, you know, I figure maybe he could be the yin to Pochettino's yang, because I know Pochettino is generally considered a little bit fierier, has the ability to grind guys down too, so Solskjaer could be that guy that picks him up. So I had always wondered aloud that if maybe we could see that transition in the future.
It's a popular conspiracy theory. I don't see why Solskjaer, would take that, even if you call it a promotion, because he's got the job that he wants. I think what they really need to do is, everybody talks about going back to the days of Ferguson, then go back to the days of Ferguson. Ferguson was as good as his number two was. And oftentimes they hired a very, you know, you look at Carlos Queiroz, a very good number two who was the tactician, who was really the day-to-day coach of the team. And Ferguson was basically the director of football who picked the team and sat in the dugouts on Saturdays. And I think that's what they need to do. Find a better, you know, find better coaches than Michael Carrick and Kieran McKenna to be Solskjaer's right-hand man and the tactician, and let Solskjaer really do what Ferguson did, which was essentially be that director of football who picks your team on Saturday. I don't see how he would accept a role as a quote unquote director of football under, you know, working with Pochettino.
All right, everybody, cross your fingers and hope that Jesse Marsh is willing to play number two to Solskjaer. anyway, so we'll move on then. We've talked about the midfield a lot, and I'm going to ask you another midfield question because, let's face it, it's should have been the main talking point over the summer. It wasn't, and now we're paying for those sins. So this one's a little bit more simpler. It's really kind of just a player comparison. I apologize if I'm leading you on with these questions. But who does United miss more in the midfield, McTominay or Pogba? I know there's a lot of rumors right now, too, that potentially Pogba still has a chance to move. Obviously, those details are a little stickier. People aren't necessarily so concerned, certainly not Mino Raiola, as he spreads his rumors. He just wants them out there. So it's going to be a two-parter. One, who does United miss more in the midfield, McTominay or Pogba? And then if Pogba were to leave in January or in the summer, are you upset, or at this point, are you willing to just drive him to the airport and be done with it?
United miss Pogba more by far. He is their best player. Their team is so much better with him in the team than without him. The amount of shots that they get with when he's there versus the amount of shots that they can't muster up when he's not there. The reason that they miss McTominay is because Pogba's been hurt. Is now that Fred's gotten this run of games and he's emerged in and he's settled into his role and he's emerged in his role and he's become this player. If you had Pogba fit and you had a midfield pair of Fred as your six and Pogba as your eight, we wouldn't be talking about McTominay at all. We miss McTominay right now because there's literally no other first team midfielder around. And it's just, wait, like we have to play Fred and Pereira or Fred and Matic. We're not playing Fred and Matic basically because Solskjaer has told him to F off and get out of the squad. Those are our editor Brent's words, not mine. But that the reason that we miss him is because we just don't have anybody else available. We totally miss Pogba more. What he brings to the team attacking wise is unmatched. And if he were to leave in January, which I don't think will happen, I don't think it can happen. You can't let him leave without bringing in a very good replacement. And people who want to drive him to the airport, they have their agenda against him. They're going to bring up the money as if they're expecting a central midfielder to score striker levels of goals. I do think that when he comes back, because of the fact that you have Fred now settled into this team, he's going to be playing in a more free role and he's going to be able to get forward and we're going to go back to seeing the best of Pogba. And then, of course, people will say, oh, it's just because he's trying to get a move to Real Madrid.
All right. Certainly something that we've talked about too in the Slack channel, and we openly muse about this as well. I'd still love to see if Pogba were to come back, because I want to be clear about this too. I know it sounded a little snide when I asked you the question, but I am a huge Paul Pogba fan. I've put my money where my mouth is. I have a Paul Pogba jersey. I love the way he plays when he plays hard. I think where my question comes from is I'm just more frustrated with all the noise, you know, and it's like, if he wants to make the move, I want to be happy for him. I want him to make the move. I also want the will he won't he to just stop, because I, you know, you're done just hearing about it in the news. And it, so that's kind of where I'm coming from now. Certainly, I think that this team is a million times better with Paul Pogba in the team. I mean, it doesn't make sense not to say that. I mean, his skills, his abilities are unreal. He's a World Cup winner. He's won the Scudetto. I mean, there's no, I don't think there's anything that you can say that, you know, degrades his quality. He's an incredible midfielder. His ability to lace the ball down the field is unmatched. I mean, some of the long balls that he plays from behind the half-yard line into the box to a Marcus Rashford who's just running on the ball is just unbelievable to me. I've never seen, you know, players be able to do it with the level of precision that he has. And we've always wondered if we could fix our midfield to the point where Paul Pogba didn't have to worry about playing defense. What abilities could we unlock? You know, where he's either playing more advanced in an eight role, or if he even moves all the way up and plays a 10 and is just always in the attacking part of the area. You know, we've always wondered what that would be the case. And certainly I've got my fingers crossed that Pogba comes back. And then I'm also going to sit on the fence. I'm going to say it's an even break. I think we miss both players equally as much. Pogba for his offensive abilities and McTominay for just his grit and determination in the midfield. For all the reasons that we've basically cussed out Andreas Pereira for the last hour. McTominay brings all those qualities. And you know what? At the end of the day, you just need just a mean son of a gun and that just like bosses things around. I mean,
you do, especially against good teams.
Yeah. I mean, just search up Aiden Boland, one of our writers on the BuzzFeed Babe, one of our staff writers, and just. As he waxes poetic about Roy Keane and the importance of Roy Keane both to him and to the midfield and everything that Roy Keane represented for, you know, Manchester United and the midfield and just all the toughness and the qualities that he brought to it, I'm not going to compare those two people, one, because I don't want anybody just, like, flipping out over me. But, McTominay...
There's definitely a place for it, but against, you know, against Newcastle... And against Villa and against those teams that sit back, you don't need, you know, he's the player that you bring on with 20 minutes left, not the player you play from the outset. Against Liverpool, against Chelsea, against Tottenham, you absolutely want him on the field.
Yeah, and if for some godforsaken reason we don't sign Erling Haaland and another Premier League team does sign Erling Haaland, McTominay, please don't be like Roy Keane in that situation.
Yeah.
He's too good of a footballer. Yeah, let's not do that. I want to see Haaland succeed wherever he goes because I've been amazed by him at RB Salzburg, but also please come to Manchester United. So speaking of attacking players playing in Central Europe, another guy that keeps hitting our news waves as we careen towards the transfer window. I don't know whether to be excited or just if I should already just put my head in the sand about it as far as the transfer window goes. But we got Jadon Sancho rumor news coming up as he continues to have a rocky relationship with Dortmund. I think maybe that would be the most fair way to put it. It doesn't seem like everything's all good over there. But what was more upsetting is I strolled through the grocery store this morning and my notification popped up on my watch that all of a sudden Liverpool are the leaders to sign Sancho. So I'm going to ask you another two-parter, Polly. First of all, what would be your thoughts on the potential of Jadon Sancho coming back to Manchester but wearing red? And do you have any fear with Liverpool's name cropping up? Are we being goaded into another signing a la Alexis Sanchez when he was getting ready to leave Arsenal and City threw their hats in the ring for him?
Oh, that's a completely different situation. I mean, Alexis Sanchez was 29 years old with about the legs of a 34-year-old. We're talking Jadon Sancho, who's like 20. It's an interesting one from Liverpool. I hadn't heard of it. What's their angle here? What's the link here? And please don't tell me because Klopp was the manager at Dortmund, because Klopp was never wasn't the manager. By the time Sancho arrived at Dortmund, he has no connection with him. But if I'm Liverpool, I definitely start looking to replace Mohamed Salah, because Mohamed Salah is getting old. And if you could get somebody to get rid of him, to take him on, and you could bring in Sancho, then it's definitely a smart move. But I think this one might be just they're raising the price on United just to kind of get, you know, they're leaking some things so that they can get a better deal from United, because this rumor, the Jadon Sancho thing, is actually real. I watch a lot of Dortmund, and there is definitely something going on there. He is not happy there anymore, and it's starting to seem a lot like the Pulisic situation. The only difference is that Sancho is still playing every week, but he is not happy. And I think a deal for him in January is actually very possible. Sancho could be so unhappy that he actually forces a move out in January. With Pulisic, it was different. Pulisic, you know, he signed with Dortmund when he was like 14, 15 years old. He played in their academy. He had been there. He had really grown up there. Sancho arrived there last year. So he basically is like, if he's unhappy, he may force a move sooner rather than later, as opposed to Pulisic, who was like, I want to leave, but I'm happy to stay here for the remainder of the season, which I think is still the most likely scenario. But I think there is enough smoke here to say that Sancho could be forcing his way out ASAP.
It's really wild when you look at Dortmund at how they've kind of become like a right-wing factory. The position, not the pejorative political term. Usman Dembele, Christian Pulisic sometimes played on the right side. Jadon Sancho, the wingers that they're producing are unreal young talents. I mean, Dembele's been a little bit rocky at Barcelona, but I don't think anybody's poo-pooing his abilities. And Christian Pulisic, after a slowish start to Chelsea, is really starting to find his form. And it, you know, makes you really disgusted that he's a Manchester United fan not playing for Manchester United.
Because of Mourinho.
Yeah. And so the chance to get a player that was so electric for Dortmund, price tag be damned. At the end of the day, sometimes we just need to be merchandise United and throw that money around. I know it's been a little we've pinched the pocketbooks a little bit, but I think a talent like Sancho would warrant the spending of the money. Especially if United wants to go all in on this team Brexit idea where they're bringing in, they want to be, you know, the pinnacle of English talent. I think Jadon Sancho is where you start on that. And don't get fleeced by an English club then who make you pay the Manchester United tax.
Yes, but it's also, yes, the English thing is a thing, but I don't think it's a thing because you're English. If you listen to Solskjaer talk about it, he wants players that want to be here. And Jadon Sancho fits the bill because, as do English players, because when they were growing up, who was the team in England? You know, if you're 20 years old, so when you were a child, 7, 8 years old, which was, 12, 13 years ago, who was the team in England? Who was the best? Manchester United. You know, every kid dreamed of Sir Alex Ferguson calling them up and asking them to come play in Manchester. So that's why the allure is still there. If you're a player in Europe, your dream is to go play for Real Madrid. So when rainy Manchester calls you up, it's, I'll go there for the money. And that's what Solskjaer's trying to get rid of, which is why I'm okay with go spend the money on Jadon Sancho, because he knows what it means to play for Manchester United. He grew up watching this team. When he was growing up, this team was the best team in the land. And now he knows, what if I'm the one that brings them back? You know, like, what do you do if you play for City? You're just another high paid mercenary who won the league and everybody's going to forget about them. What if you're the guy that brings Manchester United back? People aren't going to forget about you.
Well, also, since you brought him up, we get to say suck at the City.
Yeah.
It's a plus. It's a thing.
It's certainly a thing.
At the very least, we knock on the Twitter nonsense with the Pochettino Solskjaer thing, but I think that would be, for the most part, very well received in United Twitter by bringing in a former City player who could potentially, you know, be the guy who comes in and really unlocks things on the right side, which has been relatively dormant over the last couple of years. And God forbid,
it's been a decade. It's been a decade.
Do we want him to take the 7 shirt, or do we want him to run away from the 7 shirt? Do we just like retire the 7 shirt at this point, or do we try and find someone who can break the curse That's, I think, the real question.
Maybe give it to, like, Michael Owen again. Like, if Mario Mandzukic came, which apparently we ended all interest in him, but if he came, you could give him the 7.
Well, we will see if our Croatian striker friend, who you and I kind of battled over a little bit over the last podcast, if he makes his turn at Manchester United, we'll see if he wants to rock 7. But the last little bit of news that hit today, they announced the FA Cup third round. And, of course, we got our other boogeyman, not named Jose Mourinho. We got Nuno Espirito Santo and Wolverhampton Wanderers, who will be playing Manchester United in the FA Cup third round. The total soccer show derby, as it should be known, if they're not already calling it that. Of course, with Taylor being a Manchester United fan and Daryl being a Wolves supporter, I think it'll be really interesting to see how that game goes, especially since we don't play well against Wolves. And God forbid, if the game's played at the Molyneux, we play worse. So what are kind of your initial reactions? We're going to do a preview later on. The game's not until January. But kind of what's a quick thought on that, Paulie?
My quick thought was, oh, boy, here we go again. Maybe Nuno Santos will be the Arsenal manager by then. Maybe. I don't know. Hopefully we can come out of this. It's right after the festive period. So maybe Wolves, who have a smaller squad than we do, we'll be a little banged up, but otherwise, of course, we get Wolves, City get Port Vale because of the rule that's been in place over the last 2 years that City have to get like the easiest draw left in the draw in every cup competition. I mean, play someone difficult for me one time, City.
I was honestly surprised that City didn't draw a Ukrainian team for the FA Cup. So, I mean, Port Vale should prove to be, you know, quite tough for them.
Yeah, I mean, like, they just cakewalk to Wembley these days.
Well, if there's one thing for certain, there's going to be a banger scored against Manchester United, and it's going to be scored by Colin Dams' favorite midfielder that we don't have, other than Paulo Dybala.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ruben Neves, yeah, he'll hit one from outside the box, and that's all he's good for.
Maybe he'll actually hit all three bars before it bangs in, because I think that's the only thing he hasn't done against us at this point, as far as like spectacular goals.
Yeah. Well, so. He doesn't do it against anybody else. So, you know, it's that old thing of like, be careful what you wish for, Colin. I know he loves him, but there's plenty of other fish in the sea out there.
All right. Well, Paulie's, crapped on English food. Now he's crapping on Colin's midfielder. I think I'm going to close off the show now before we get any spice here. So, Paulie, I'm going to allow you to plug anything that you might be working on, just came out with. Also, let's hear that social media handle one more time so people can direct their hate towards you.
Yeah. Follow me at PQuestel. That's PKWESTEL. I'm still facing writer's block because I just don't know what angle to take about this game, other than Pereira stinks and Woodward is a catastrophe. I've got something coming in the pipeline that'll revisit how Ferguson's teams used to play. In case you think that Solskjaer's teams just sit back and play ultra defensively and they should play more like Ferguson, you'd kind of be surprised how Ferguson's teams used to play. That's the long project that I'm working on.
Oh man, well, it sounds like you're going to be awfully busy. What I will do then is I will remind fans, be sure to like, rate, and subscribe the podcast. Certainly we want to see 5 stars. And also be sure to like and comment on all your articles you're reading on the Busby Babe. Stay tuned to the Busby Babe website as well, post Tottenham. Sure, it will be full of spicy hot takes no matter the result. Who knows, maybe we even force Paulie into comparing United's midfielders to various English dishes, BuzzFeed style. I think that's any content is king at this point.
Don't give me ideas.
I'm sending it to Brent right now. You're stuck. And lastly, I'll just say, give me a follow on Twitter too. I'm at Nathan is Red. For Paulie Questel, I'm Nathan Heinschel, reminding you to put new midfielders on your Christmas wish list. Have a good one.